Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Schweiger discusses Parshat Ki Tisa. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha is Parshat Ki Tisa. In last year's podcast, we examined the central topic of this week's parsha, which is the sin of the golden calf. Today, I would like to examine the leadership role that Moshe takes in the aftermath of the golden calf. Let us begin by looking at chapter 32, verse 7. And God said to Moshe, Go down. Because your people have acted in a corrupted manner, the ones that you brought up from Egypt. Verse 8, they have departed very quickly from the path which I have commanded them to be on. They have made for them a calf, a mask, a facade. They have bowed down to it. They have offered up sacrifices to it. They have said, these are the gods, these are your gods, Israel, that have brought you up from the land of Egypt. The first thing which God says to Moshe, Lech Raid, go down. The rabbis already in the Talmud are troubled by the usage of the word, first of all, the repetition, but also the usage of the word raid, go down. It would have sufficed to simply say, go. Raid, go down. We know Moshe is on the top of the mountain. Obviously, if he's going, he will have to go down. And the rabbis understand that the going down is not just a geographical movement, but a spiritual descension. God, in effect, says to Moshe, go down from your glory. All the honor which I have shown you is only being given to you for the sake of the Jewish people, but they no longer warrant it. Moshe has been on the mountain for the last 40 days and 40 nights. He has had an otherworldly experience in his communication, in his experience of God. According to this rabbinic comment, God is telling him that the whole purpose of that experience was for the sake of the Jewish people, in order to be able to bring them the Luchot Ha'idut, the tablets of the testimony, the tablets that reflect the covenantal relationship between God and the Jewish people. But the people have broken the covenant. Hence, there is no purpose in Moshe remaining anymore on the mountain. On the top of the mountain. It is possible also to give another explanation. Moshe has been having a very profound religious experience, but God, in effect, is saying to Moshe, you have to go back down to reality. The reality needs you. You can't be in your, what we would call, ivory tower. And then what is the continuation? Ki shichet amcha. Your people have become corrupted. And once again, the rabbis say, it's as if God is thrusting off the people. They're no longer my people. They're your people. You deal with them. But perhaps we can see this as a signal to Moshe, following up on Lech Raid. You need to somehow go down to their level. They have become corrupted. The people need you. You have to somehow change the course of their direction. You're the one who took them out of Egypt. You're the one who should be bringing them into the land of Israel. You have put them on a certain path, but they are backtracking. You need to reroute them. And so we see in the next verse, when God says to him, they have quickly departed from the path which I have commanded them. They have created an idol. They have bowed down to it. They worship it. From this verse we see that the core sin of the golden calf is idolatry. We also see how everything which the Exodus had been building up to, the revelation at Sinai, the creation of the covenant between God and the Jewish people, was quickly unraveled by what happened at the golden calf. And as I mentioned a moment ago, God is indicating to Moshe, it is up to you to go down and do damage control. Note that verse 9 says, and God said to Moshe, I have seen this people, and they are very, very stiff-necked, obdurate. The question is raised, why does it need to say a second time, and God said to Moshe? In verse 7, it already said, once God said to Moshe. And I would like to suggest as a general rule, whenever someone is talking, and then all of a sudden we find that it says a second time, and he said, that evidently there was a pause in the speech, in the conversation. There was an expectation of a response. And when the response is not forthcoming, then there is a need to somehow reiterate the point, or maybe I should say reformulate it. So that if we look at what we have in verse 9, God says to Moshe, I have seen this people and they are stiff-necked. But even more important, in verse 10, God says to him, and now, leave me. I will become angry at them and destroy them. Or I will allow my anger to just burst forth and destroy them. And I will make you into a great nation. What is being added in this reformulation? God is impressing upon Moshe the urgency. Va'ata, and now. Realize that now is the moment of truth. God is about to destroy the Jewish people. God is prepared to now make Moshe the new Jew, or the new founder of the Jewish people. Note that in verse 10 that God says, leave me, which is a very strange expression. The implication being that Moshe is grabbing God, so to speak. And the rabbis actually see in this expression a signal to Moshe, a call, say something, do something now. Because if you don't intervene, if you just leave me, I will destroy them. And when God gives the signal to Moshe, we find in verse 11, Vayechal Moshe et pnei Hashem Elokav. And Moshe now petitions God. Moshe is waiting for the invitation, and as soon as it is presented, he grabs it. And in the next three verses, verses 11, 12, and 13, Moshe now becomes the defender of the Jewish people. Anyone who is familiar with the famous Hasidic figure, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Miberdichev, who is known as the Sanegor Shel Yisrael, the defender of the Jewish people, who always tries to put things in a positive light. His model was Moshe. Let me perhaps interject. Before Moshe can deal with the people, Moshe needs to deal with God. Moshe has to do immediate damage control, because God's anger will burst forth, destroy the people. And he has to somehow plead their case, defend them. And note Moshe's line of defense. His first point, verse 11. Lama Hashem yechere apcha ba'amecha asher otzeta me'eretz Mitzrayim b'choach gadol uviyad chazaka. Why should you, Hashem, be angry at your people that you have taken out of Egypt with great force, with a mighty hand? There are two points which I would like to pursue in this first argument of Moshe. The first point, you're invested in this people. If God said to Moshe, in verse 7. Your people have become corrupt, the ones that you brought out of Egypt. Moshe thrusts the ball back in God's court. Moshe says to God, they're not my people, they're your people. You are the one who took them out of Egypt. Moshe says, it is not just that you took them out of Egypt. You brought them up. Hotzeiticha. You extracted them from Egypt. And if we add to that, the end of verse 11, B'choach gadol, b'yad chazakah. The 10 plagues was a process. It was a lot of effort. And what Moshe, in effect, is saying to God is, you were the one from beginning to end who made that effort. You are invested in this people. How could you then destroy them? But perhaps there's also another element. The Koach Gadol and the Yad Chazakah was not only directed against Pharaoh, but on another level, directed to the Jewish people. As we have noted in other podcasts, Pharaoh succeeded to a great extent in dehumanizing the Jewish people, in stripping them of their human dignity, embedding in them a slave mentality. The force, the power, the strong hand which God exercises is also directed to the Jewish people. It's a form of shock treatment to be able to somehow neutralize that slave mentality, to somehow bring them, restore them to their human grandeur. And perhaps Moshe is alluding to the fact that it is not only that you are invested in this people, but you know more than anyone else how deeply entrenched they were in slavery, the tremendous effort it took to remove them from that framework. And perhaps you also can realize, you God, how so easily they could revert back to that. First point which Moshe makes. Verse 12. Why should the Egyptians say that in evil you took them out in order to kill them in the mountains, to destroy them from the face of the earth? Return from your anger. Go back on this evil that you want to do to your people. The second point which Moshe is making, you God are invested in a second way. Again, something which we discussed in other podcasts. A major purpose in the plagues was an educational one, to bring the Egyptians to a realization, a recognition of God. Not only that God exists, but that God is a God of compassion, a God of morality. If the whole purpose, or a major purpose of the plagues, is to sanctify the name of God, then Moshe is now saying to God, in killing the Jewish people, you will be desecrating your name. The Egyptians will say that in fact, the whole purpose of the Exodus was ultimately to destroy the Jewish people. Rather than being a God of compassion, you will be seen as a demonic God. Moshe says to God, return from your anger. There's an expression in modern day Hebrew, which appears very often on commercials. Al tehi tzodek, tehi chacham. Don't be right. Be smart. In this case, the Jews perhaps deserve to be killed. They have broken the covenant. But what Moshe is saying to God is, but ultimately, there is a purpose in sanctifying God's name. And even if God is correct in destroying the Jewish people, it is not wise, because the repercussions will be a desecration of that name. So now, if we go back and summarize, in the first point, Moshe is saying, you are invested in the Jewish people. You know them. They're your people. Don't kill them. You wanted to sanctify your name. Don't desecrate it. And the last point, verse 13. Remember the covenant you made with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yisrael, your servants. You swore to them, I will increase your seed as the stars of the heaven. And this land I will give to your seed, and they will inherit it forever. So Moshe says, you have a commitment to the patriarchs. How can you now destroy this people and create a new people who will be known as the children of Moses? Although Moses is descended from Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, yet nevertheless, the implication in verse 10 is that you will become the new founder of the people. And what Moshe is saying is, but you have a covenant with the patriarchs. They are the founders. In rabbinic literature, this is expressed in a very beautiful way. If a table which has three legs cannot stand, how can a table with one leg stand? If the merit of the patriarchs cannot be invoked to save the Jewish people, how can Moshe's merit be invoked at a later date? Note the fact that Moshe is prepared to forego his honor, quote-unquote, and save the Jewish people, and save the covenant which was made with the patriarchs. And we're told in verse 14, Vayinachem Hashem, and God changed his mind regarding the evil that he had said to do to his people. Moshe's words penetrate the divine will. God recognizes they are my people. Did Moshe change God's mind? I would not say that. I would rather say that God gives Moshe the challenge. Now is the moment of truth. The future of this people lies in your hand. Present their case. Argue it. And Moshe succeeds. Ultimately, Moshe is doing the will of God. Ultimately, God is not interested in destroying the Jewish people, but would like to see them live and change. Let's look at verse 15. And then he turns, and Moshe goes down from the mountain with the two tablets of the testimony in his hand, the tablets that are written on both sides, the tablets which in verse 16 are described as being the work of God, the writing of God engraved on the tablets. Verse 15 begins with Moshe turning. Moshe is operating on two levels. On the one hand, he has to plead the case of the Jewish people before God, to be their supreme defender, to guarantee that God will not destroy them. That is his most pressing concern. And he is able to get that lease on life. But that's not the end of the story. Moshe needs to deal with the Jewish people. If God is willing to give them a lease on life, it is only because there will be a change in direction. As I said before, they will be rerouted to go back to the path which they need to be on. And that is Moshe's goal when he turns, where he has to now deal with the Jewish people. And when Moshe comes down the mountain, he encounters Joshua. There is a tremendous tumult, which is noise, which is coming up from the camp. And evidently Joshua is at a point where he can't see what's going on, but he assumes there is a sound which seems that there is a war going on. And Moshe's response in verse 18, it is not a war. It is just people shouting. And then look at verse 19. When Moshe comes close to the camp, and he sees the calf and the dancing, Moshe becomes angry. He casts the tablets from his hands. He smashes them at the foot of the mountain. And then verse 20. He takes the calf which they had made. He burns it. He grinds it until it's very fine. He scatters the ashes on the water and then has the Jewish people drink it. Note Moshe's response. The first thing, when Moshe comes close to the camp, he sees not only the calf, but he sees the dancing. And it would seem to be that that issue is critical. God spoke of the building of a calf, the bowing down, the worship. God never mentioned the dancing. If we put it in our terminology, the dancing can be associated with merriment. But I would perhaps add something which I mentioned in another podcast. The dancing may reflect a total breakdown in the midst of the people. It is not just a question of idol worship. It's a question of a lifestyle which is totally degenerate. As we are told earlier in verse 6, the people got up early in the morning. They offer up burnt offerings. They bring near peace offerings. They sit down to eat and drink. They get up to sport. And although we don't know exactly what this meaning is, to sport, but it seems to be that the milieu that's in the camp is one of total decadence. Hefkerut. Everything goes. If we were to skip a few verses, this actually appears in verse 25. And Moshe saw the people kifaruahu. Parua means disheveled, wild. This is what Moshe sees, which is so disturbing. When the Jews left Egypt, we're told that they left according to their hosts. They leave in a very orderly way. As they go through the desert, come to Sinai, receive the Torah. The purpose of the covenant is to create a structure, to create a sense of limits, boundaries. And through those boundaries, that people have a sense of right and wrong. For the same reason, Mount Sinai is fenced off, and the instructions are explicitly given. The people cannot go up the mountain. Only Moshe is allowed to the top of the mountain. The whole movement from slavery to freedom is to move to a framework where there are structures, where there are boundaries, and through them a sense of what is right and wrong. The sin of the golden calf is not just a question of theology. It is a question of a lifestyle. Of a lifestyle which wants to destroy any sense of boundaries, where you eat and drink and you sport, where everything and anything is okay. And when Moshe sees that, he sees the merriment, he's angered. Note that the anger of God becomes transmitted to Moshe. Very interestingly, Moshe now sees what God had seen. And what does he do? He thrusts down the tablets. He smashes them. There is one opinion among the rabbis that says that the tablets had become heavy and Moshe can no longer bear them. And they fall and they break. But in fact, the sense from the verse, the pshat, is that this was a conscious act. I'd even say a very demonstrative act. Vayashlech, he throws them. Vayashaber, he smashes them. The same language which is used later on for what we should be doing to idolatry. In the Talmud, the rabbis note, Masechet Shabbat, that this is one of three places where Moshe took the initiative. He was not told by God to do this. And where God, in the end, affirmed his action. There is, in fact, a play on words where it says later on, Asher Shibarta, Yasher Kochacha Shashibarta. As we say in today, whenever someone gets an aliyah, Yasher Koyach, right? More power to you. God is affirming what he did. Why did Moshe do it? An immediate response would be to say that this was a spontaneous act. I'd even say an impulsive act. Moshe's furious. In his rage, he throws it down. I would like to suggest following the rabbinic understanding that this was a premeditated action, thought out. It was not the result of a fit of rage, but Moshe consciously is breaking the tablets for two purposes. The first purpose, if the tablets are broken, this becomes a defense line for the Jewish people. There are no tablets. On a certain level, the covenant has not been crystallized, so their sin is not so great. And perhaps this is following the whole line which Moshe was taking earlier with God, to somehow defend the Jewish people, to mitigate their sin. But there's another side to the coin, and that is, this is a demonstrative act to the Jewish people to impress upon them the full magnitude, the repercussion of what they've just done, to impress upon them what they did now was to break the covenant which they had made with God at Sinai. And this point is then reflected in Pasuk Chaf, where we have a rapid succession of verbs. And he took, and he burned, and he ground, and he sprinkled, and he gave to drink. Moshe now acts in a very forceful manner. He takes the calf, he smashes it, he burns it. He forces the Jews to drink the ashes with the water they're drinking as a way of showing the Jewish people there is no room for dialogue over here. This is something which is to be totally condemned. Note the change in roles, the change of hats. When Moshe speaks to God, Moshe brings up three arguments to somehow defend the Jewish people, to make sure that God will not destroy them. But when Moshe now is facing the Jewish people, rather than mitigate in their eyes what they've done, Moshe tries to magnify to the nth degree the severity of what's just happened, and all for the purpose of bringing about that rerouting. I'll skip for a moment this interchange between Moshe and Aaron, and go to verse 25. When Moshe sees the people, that they are wild, Moshe stands up, and he proclaims, "Whoever is for God, come to me, and all the tribe of Levi come." At which point Moshe says to them, "You need to go out and kill all of those who are involved in the worship of the calf." And we're told in verse 28, the tribe of Levi do this. They execute the word of Moshe, and 3,000 people fall. This is an act of zealotry, a hard-line position, which allows for no compromise. Very, very harsh. On the other hand, this may be viewed as a surgical operation, where you perhaps amputate part of the body in order to save the person. It is clear from what follows that this ultimately saved the Jewish people. At this point in time, the Jewish people need a leader who will lay the law down. This was Aaron's tragic error. He thought that he could stall, he could delay, he could somehow work with the people, speak their language, somehow be with them, and yet at the same time, direct them. They could find some sort of meeting point. Although he didn't validate what they did, he also didn't condemn it in the strongest of terms. But that's what the people need now. Because what is happening now is so inimical to everything which happened at Sinai. There is no room for dialogue. The golden calf undermines everything which speaks of a relationship between God and the Jewish people, which speaks of their movement from slavery to freedom. And Moshe is the one who gets that message across. And after the people are killed, we're told in verse 30, that on the following day, Moshe says to the people, "You have sinned a great sin. And now I need to go up to God and seek atonement for your sin." Note the fact, God said to Moshe, "And now leave me." Moshe didn't leave God at that moment. He knew that now he needs to act. He needs to defend the people. When he comes down the mountain, he brings the message to the people, you have committed a grave sin. I need to go back, and I need to defend you. And that's what follows in verses 31 and 32. Moshe once again pleads the cause of the Jewish people. Note the fact that this time he acknowledges that they have sinned a great sin. But this time he says to God in verse 32, and now raise up their sin, an expression of forgiving them. And if not, wipe me out of the book that you have written. This verse creates a certain closure with what we had earlier. Earlier God said, let me wipe them out, and I will make you into a great nation. And what Moshe is now doing is saying, if there's anybody who needs to be destroyed, it's me, not them. What is Moshe doing? On a certain level, what Moshe is saying to God, if there was a failure here, perhaps the failure is mine and not theirs. I am their leader. If they were able to do what they did, maybe that reflects my inability. So if there's anybody to be punished, it's me. But if God is not going to punish Moshe, it's because God feels that Moshe is a capable leader. And if he's a capable leader, he has the ability, perhaps, to bring them back to where they need to be. And that's what Moshe says, lift up their sin. Give them another chance. Moshe is not saying to God, give them amnesty, pardon them. Moshe is simply saying, lift up their sin. Give them the ability to rise once again from what they've done. And once again, God accepts Moshe's point. Moshe will not be wiped out. Moshe will continue to lead the people. The people on some level will have to pay the price of what they've done. And we're told in verse 35 that God brings a plague upon the people. But we're also told that God says to Moshe in chapter 34, verse 1, carve out, chisel out two new tablets. The two new tablets that will replace the old ones that Moshe broke. This is the verse which I alluded to earlier, Asher Shibarta, where God is affirming, you were right in breaking them. What is the difference between the second tablets and the first tablets? The first tablets are the tablets of God. The second tablets are the tablets of Moshe. Perhaps what we see is that there is a greater need to have human involvement. The people are not able to live up to that encounter with God, direct encounter. In the same way that at the revelation at Sinai, the people ask, you speak to us, Moshe, don't have God speak to us. The people also need tablets that are written by Moshe rather than by God. The people need things that are grounded much more in their reality. And this, perhaps, is what God says to Moshe at the very beginning when he said, Lech Reid. You need to somehow bring yourself down to the people. You have to find that you are more in their frame of reference. They need you to be that medium between them and God. So if I were to summarize, our parsha is the crowning point of Moshe's leadership. It is a model of crisis management, of how a leader has to be able to take a crisis and turn it around to become a catalyst for further growth. How Moshe acts differently when he speaks to God to when he speaks to the people. With God, Moshe adopts a conciliatory tone. He is the ultimate defender of the people. He is willing to sacrifice himself so that they will continue to live. But vis-a-vis the people, Moshe takes a very hard line. He doesn't want to be soft on them. He wants them to realize the magnitude of what they've done, the need to have to change their behavior. Moshe clearly gets his message across to the people. In the aftermath of this story, Moshe reaches a level of relationship with God which no other human being comes to the point where in chapter 33, verse 13, Moshe says to God, "If I have found favor in your eyes, inform me of your ways, so that I will know." And God says to Moshe at a certain point, verse 20, "You cannot see my face. A human being cannot see me and live. You will see my back," verse 23, "but my face you will not see." And the rabbis understand this, that there are 50 gates of understanding in the world. 49 of them were given to Moshe. The 50th, which is the ability to ultimately understand the essence of God, he cannot have, as God says, because he is still a human being. Which means that Moshe reached the ultimate relationship which a person can have with God. God is willing to open up that relationship because Moshe completely gave himself, sacrificed himself for the survival of the Jewish people. It is for the sake of the Jewish people that God brings Moshe into that intimate relationship. And on the other hand, we're told at the end of the parsha that when Moshe comes down from the mountain with the second tablets, this is chapter 34, verse 29, Moshe did not know that his face was beaming. And when Aaron and the Jewish people see him, Vayir'u migeshet elav, verse 30, they are in awe, they are afraid of coming near him. In the aftermath of this experience, Moshe has become magnified in the eyes of the people. If before this the people saw Moshe as being a godlike figure, he now is clearly reflecting the glory of God. His face, which is beaming, is a reflection of the Shekhinah. And it's reflecting the Shekhinah in a positive way. The same Moshe who casts the gates of the people is also the Moshe who makes the people realize that God has given them a second chance. There are a second set of tablets. The divine presence is still reflected in their midst. Moshe's beaming face is not only an empowerment of Moshe, but ultimately an empowerment of the Jewish people, restoring their glory, their connection to God. A true leader is someone who is able to handle a crisis in a thought-out way, well-thought-out way, who is able to see the larger picture, who is not thinking of his own interests, but of the people that he is leading. A leader is somebody who not only solves a crisis, but is able to use that crisis as a springboard for growth and development, who is able to lift up the people, bring them to where they need to be, whose greatness is a function of the greatness of the people, where in elevating the people, he becomes elevated. And where from beginning to end, the goal is the people that he represents. And in our case, not only the people, but God. Because Moshe's leadership is to be able to bring the Jews where they need to be, but ultimately, to be able to make room for God in this world, to sanctify the name of God. And in our parsha, he succeeds far beyond expectation. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your emails to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.